Utes Insider here on The Bill Riley Show. The Utes Insider is presented by the Dish Professionals. Now here's Bill Riley with a Utes Insider on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Sly's with us on a Monday. We'll talk some Utes and we'll talk some NFL. We won't talk about brackets because none of us, the only person in our media world group that has anybody left, I think, is Spence. Spence Checkets has UConn as one of his final four teams. But besides that, nobody had San Diego State, FAU, Miami, and I didn't have UConn myself. Sly, you'll be happy to know, though, you're not last anymore. You jump leapfrogged over Gordy and James Peterson, so you're not in the cellar anymore.
Man, that is perfect. JP can – I'm going to have to give him some words that I'm better than him at picking.
Well, I don't think any of us were great, and I'll tell you what, this is a crazy Final Four. I mean, I know the TV ratings aren't going to be great because there aren't any true blue bloods in it, but how fun has this tournament been just with the upsets and the parity we've seen in college basketball this year?
Man, I think it's great, man. It's showing you that sports is all over the place and that the game isn't won until it's played. I think that's the best part about March Madness, right? You can have all these speculation, all these favorites, but, you know, it comes down to the wire and it can go either way. People have to make spectacular shots to win, whether you are the blue blood team or not. But it just keeps the fervor of the sport alive, and you know the mystery of who's going to win and come out on top, and the excitement. I was talking to Leaf about, you know, he said he did two different brackets, right?
Yeah.
With two different outcomes. So it just keeps the fandom part of sports alive, and I love that aspect.
Well, and here's what I'll say: we'll never get this kind of parity with football. But when they expand that thing to 12, Sly, you're going to have a year or two where some of the big boys get knocked off. You might have a Final Four that doesn't have an Alabama or an Ohio State or a Blue Blood or a couple of Blue Bloods in there. When you have four, it just doesn't happen. But I'm just telling you, in a year or so, when this thing moves out to 12, every couple of years, you're going to have a couple of those big boys knocked off like you've seen in college basketball.
Yeah, but I mean, like this much? You mean we don't have a top three seed at all in the Final Four? One, two, or three in any division of the bracket did not make it to the Final Four. It is crazy. And for UConn and Miami to be up there, how about FAU coming through? Normally, like FAU Cinderella stories, you only get to like the Elite Eight at most. But these guys are all the way here to the Final Four. So, man, very excited to see them or San Diego State get into the championship game. San Diego State beat my person. I picked Alabama to go all the way to the championship versus Kansas. But yeah, I mean, San Diego State, man, coming through it. It should be a very interesting championship here next weekend.
I agree. And by the way, San Diego State is doing nothing to hurt its chances of gaining access to the Pac-12. I think they've probably got a pretty good case right now. But they're only enhancing it now. The Pac-12 would love nothing more than to have a little bit of that Final Four money coming into the coffers this year.
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, you got guys like Kawhi Leonard who went to a San Diego State, and even in football, I believe Marshall Faulk went there. So they got good history of a few players that have gone there, and if they jump conferences to the Pac-12 or when they jump conferences to the Pac-12, the more and more names and faces will go there. So, one, it's a great destination. I absolutely love playing in San Diego State back in the Mountain West Conference days every single year down there. So it's a great destination for schools to go to as far as the weather's concerned in the fall. But I think San Diego State is definitely doing their job at improving their stock in the Pac-12.
I'm wondering, since we're talking about San Diego State and the Pac-12, there's been lots of talk about how many, you know, will the Pac-12 add San Diego State and SMU? Will they, you know, will they stand put at 10? Should they add four? Let me ask you this. Would you be okay if they just added San Diego State for the short term? I mean, to me, they seem to be a good fit. They've got winning football and basketball at a high level. They've got a new state-of-the-art stadium. They're in Southern California. Would you be okay if they just added one and didn't add two, three, or four?
I mean, I'm okay if they don't add any. But, yeah, I'm definitely okay with San Diego State. One thing, San Diego State has always been competitive. We've always looked at them as the lower conference, but it's something that they've never been a pushover. So now with other things and California kids understanding that San Diego State is now a P5, that, you know, they'll get more California kids with recruiting. Recruiting will be a little easier for them. They get more Pac-12 money. So they will be entertaining. They've always been competitive. And so I really love that, San Diego State coming through it. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't mind if it went back to the Pac-10 or if it stayed here at the Pac-12 with just adding San Diego State. I don't think it matters either way. I just hope Utah is the top of the conference each and every year.
Stevenson Sylvester with us here on the Bill Riley Show today. So there's more Lamar Jackson news today. He came out right around the league meetings are going on in Arizona, right before his head coach was sitting down to speak to the media this morning. Basically sent out a tweet that said he asked the Ravens for a trade back on March the 2nd. It was 5 days later that they put the tag on him. But is this thing getting worse? Do you see them being able to mend the fences here? Because there's been no real interest. Nobody's been really interested in both giving him a fully guaranteed contract and giving up two first-round draft picks. They've let him test the market. Nothing's been there. But it kind of feels like he's now driving the wedge between himself and the team. Do you feel like this is a repairable situation, or is Lamar going to be someplace else?
I definitely think he's going to be someplace else. With all the stuff that is going on and the fact that he's handling his own contract, you know, that's just going to be back of his mind as he's playing, as he's doing anything with this franchise, unless this franchise comes out with that number that is okay with Lamar. You know, that's the only way that the Ravens and Lamar Jackson will be okay. Like, whether this year plays out and he's under that tag or he goes to another team, there's no way that relationship is going to be mended unless the Ravens buy into giving him what he needs. Otherwise, he's 26 years old, literally at the prime of his career, already has an MVP, he's been to the playoffs almost every single year. Yes, he hasn't finished the last couple of years, but there's not a lot of people, there's a few people who don't finish the year. So he's not the only person that's never finished, you know, a season or has a couple seasons where they haven't finished, but it doesn't diminish what he brings to the table. I think Lamar Jackson is an outstanding player, and with how the NFL is going as far as how football is taken, he is the guy you want on your football team. So I think a lot of other teams are kind of waiting it out, making sure that, you know, or seeing if the Ravens will just release him or whatever happens. But I think that I don't think the relationship between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson will ever be the same. You know, I think that even if he plays this year out, he's definitely gone from that organization. But if he's able to be traded before, or if Baltimore ends up coming with the money that Lamar Jackson is expecting.
Explain to the listeners why it's so problematic in the NFL, in sports, not to have an agent, but especially when you're a guy like Lamar Jackson at the quarterback position, not having an agent.
Well, honestly, it's just like you I like to see the dynamic is like a household dynamic. It's the parent arguing with the husband, or the parents arguing between each other, or the parent trying to argue with the child and try to get them to do what you want. You need a liaison. You need a intermediate person to have that conversation and mend the edges and vouch for you. You know, Lamar Jackson is, of course, singularly focused on what his production is, and as agents are. But you know, I don't think that. I think more in this situation is the organization is not wanting to have this, or I don't think football, the NFL is wanting to have this go beyond Lamar Jackson representing himself. You already see Bobby Wagner representing himself and how he's been able to do it, but nobody of Lamar Jackson's caliber and money, because you're going to get guys like Kyler Murray's and Deshaun Watson's who are now going to fire their agents and be able to represent themselves because they think they can do what Lamar Jackson did. So I think that's more of the case in this scenario, but you definitely want an agent to represent you and make sure that all the ins and outs, because with these contracts, they are so extensive. There's so many little nuanced things that you don't really know about on the regular that an agent would know then you wouldn't know by yourself. Of course, Lamar Jackson, I know what I bring to the table. I can see what the NFL landscape is, and this and that. But as far as knowing when to structure deals, how to restructure his contract to make sure there are other people to come in, those are things you want to have an agent for. And so I think that's a fear with the organizations is all the little things that when you give somebody this big contract, like Deshaun Watson, he just had to renegotiate his contract, right? You can't really do that with a player, and they're wanting to make sure an agent can handle that. So I think they just want to have that conversation with the agent rather than a self-represented player.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you're asking for an unprecedented contract. You're not just asking for a good – you're asking for – and I shouldn't say unprecedented because Deshaun Watson got the guaranteed money, but you're asking for a deal with the same guaranteed money but also larger than what Deshaun Watson got. And to do that without having any experience of negotiating contracts just seems to be problematic. If you were going for a basic one-year deal, two-year deal, and you were a – you know, a free agent linebacker or corner or safety, I think that might be a little bit easier. But playing the position he plays and the dynamics that are involved and the type of contract he's asking for just seems like a pretty big ask for somebody that has no experience doing it.
It's daunting. And when you make, and as an organization, when you make decisions like that, right? Like if a business was to be acquired at a high rate, say Qualtrics, right? Like how they got acquired, you want to have the right legal team in place to make sure that all the dots are crossed and all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. You want to make sure that that is done properly. And you want to make sure that there's multiple I's on this. You know, if Lamar Jackson and his mother are representing him, then, you know, you can't really assure that everything is done. And so for somebody to get into a contract, as you said, of this magnitude, you want to make sure that, you know, you can have contingencies in there for everything that goes on. I think NFL contracts are different than any other sport, you know, from the non-guaranteed standpoint, that that if you are promoting some kind of guaranteed contract of this magnitude, you want to make sure that the representation is proper. And, you know, of course, we are in the meetings with Lamar, so we don't know exactly what's said or how this has happened or why Lamar Jackson feels like he can do this on his own. But I think the whole situation with this negotiation is solely based on the fact that he's representing himself.
Sly with us for a moment or two more here on the Bill Riley Show today as we're talking a little bit about the NFL and what's going on with Lamar Jackson right now. We also talk a little bit of college football. It'll be week two of spring football up on the Hill, and got to watch a little bit last week. And, you know, true to his word, the young quarterbacks are getting lots of reps. They're just, you know, it's Brandon Rose and it's Nate Johnson that are getting the majority. Yeah, Nate getting the majority of the reps up there right now. And as I've said before, this is exactly how they should be handling it. You know, Cam's kind of a de facto coach to these guys, an advisor in the ear. He's out at practice doing all that stuff, but these guys are getting the reps. And, you know, whether it's in spring ball or whether they head into fall camp, you want to know if one of those two guys is ready to be the number two guy this year and maybe be a spot starter with you if need be. But maybe more importantly, Sly, are one of these two guys the guys that could take the mantle a year from now and be the man to succeed Cam Rising?
And that's what you got to do. Any proper organization does that. They make sure that they don't recruit at the moment, but they've been recruiting and from years past, kind of like game prep, right? We don't just get ready for that game that week. We've been ready for that game for a few weeks, right? You don't just go into it. So in this QB situation, Cam Rising leaves next year, right? We already know what we're doing the year or when Cam Rising leaves. And so that's what these reps are important for. And unless something drastic changes, and that's when we'll have to make a, you know, an adverse, you know, decision and go to the transfer portal and do something like that. But we're working. We have in the woodworks. We've got great recruits. People are coming to Utah like crazy. Brandon Rose. You got Bryson Barnes already there. Nate Johnson is there vying for that position. And all the recruits that we have coming in, we got a great future here at Utah. And so these guys are putting in the work for years to come, as you said. And that's what you got to do. Spring football, where there's not a lot of onus on how successful you're going to be in the fall, but, you know, just preparing for what you're going to be in the fall. This is the perfect time to get those young guys reps. You know, when I was a part of spring football, whether that's in the NFL or here at Utah, you know, that was what it's all about, is developing the depth of that football team. And I think that's been one of the high marks of this football team, is how deep our roster has been the last couple of years.
The position group you played in was linebacker. Lander Barton and Kareni Reed are here this spring. They're participating. Lavani DeMooney, who they expect to be here in the summer, will maybe be a starter. He's the guy that played for 3 years at Stanford. But what about the depth behind those guys? Do you feel good about the Justin Medlocks and some of the other guys that are backing up? Do you feel like there's good depth at that linebacker spot?
I do. I felt great about Justin Medlock even last year as a freshman, because, you know, I thought he was making noise just as Lander was making. But of course, Lander was the five-star recruit, so he got a lot more publicity. But, you know, as far as production and what the coaches were saying, I thought Justin Medlock carried a lot of weight when those conversations were happening last spring and in fall camp. And then, of course, me being at practices watching him, I love the way that Medlock moves. I think that it's great. You know, I think that he's learning a lot from Kareni Reed. I think Kareni Reed is an ultimate leader. I love watching this guy work, whether it's on game day or even in practice. I think he does a great job with making sure the younger guys know exactly what they need to know so they can feel confident when they're in there. I think the depth at the linebacker in the linebacker room is something that we haven't had in a while. And as far as that security, you know, there was always like one or a couple young guys, but, you know, Lander being freshman of the year, looking great, feeling more and more confident. Kareni Reed now with a year and a half, 2 years under his belt. We're getting in these senior transfers, DeMooney. I just think that we're loaded with talent across the board, and developing these young guys in the spring is only going to promote success for us in the fall. And I think the linebacker position is the most important position on the defensive side of the football, simply because you play in the middle with the run and the pass. As far as decision-making and making things happen, it has to be quick and concise and confident. And so if you're getting experienced guys there that are playing with confidence, it bodes well for your defense.
How do you think Miki Sukaturanga will translate from defensive end to tight end?
I think it'll be great. You know, hopefully he can take that Logan Kendall spot and just brutalize people. I think his mindset as a defensive lineman, he understands what a defensive lineman is trying to do as far as their alignment, as far as their shifts. I think that what's going to be hard for him is to not be able to move before the snap. You know, that is something that a lot of defensive players transitioning to offense struggle with. And so I think that might be his only struggle, but he's extremely physical. I think that we need that big body in the running game. You know, we had those big receivers last year, and then Logan came in and we went 13 personnel. I thought that was a highlight of our offense, is to be able to be versatile in that 12 to 13 package with Logan Kendall, Brant Keithy, and Dalton Kincaid, and even Thomas Yasmin when he came in, when we were able to go there. It added a different dimension to our offense. So Miki going to tight end is a great move, and I hope he finds success this year with it.
That is Stevenson Sylvester, who, while not a great picker of basketball or playoff games, is not the worst picker in our ESPN 700 circle, at least right now. The coach, Gordy Chiesa, wears that crown. We'll see if that changes this weekend. All right, Sly, you have a good day. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Sly. Steve.